We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hey, it's JD here. And welcome back to the SNL Hall of Fame. I cannot tell you where we are legally. I can tell you if you were to fly a drone over the site where we are, you might find all of our clothes spelling out the word help. That's right. We're in here naked right now. Naked. And Bill has fashioned a spoon into a shovel, and we are working on things, folks. But today we are rewinding the tape and revisiting the case for John Lovitz, who finally gets the nod in season 7, earning 69.14% of the votes and making it in on his second ballot. The conversation in this episode is steered by Chief Conversationalist, the great Thomas Senna, with Brad Robinson stepping in as the passionate advocate for Lovitz. And of course, Matt Ardill is here to drop some trivial knowledge across the way. If you're a fan of acting, then you're in for a treat. Let's get into it.
With Chief Conversationalist Thomas Senna. Featuring Matt Ardill. And special guest, Brad Robinson. And now, curator of the hall, JD.
Thank you so much, Doug DeNance. It is an absolute thrill to be here with you in the SNL Hall of Fame. Here is the deal. My name is JD, and I'm asking you very politely to wipe your feet before you walk inside these hallowed halls. This is episode 14, and that means we're rounding the corner. We've got two nominees left after this week. Then we've got our Don Pardo Award winner, and then we've got our crowd favorite roundtable episode coming up, and then it'll be the finale. So five episodes are left here, folks. You should be starting to formulate your ballots at this point. They should be in a state of somewhat repair. Now, we may have thrown a curveball at you this week because we promised Bobby Moynihan, and instead we are doing John Lovitz this week. We had a scheduling snafu. Lovitz was available. So we went with Lovitz. Poor Lovitz. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. I'm going to say this even before we listen to the conversation. So there's that. There's something that we do every week here in the SNL Hall of Fame, and that is we take a deep dive into the career of a former cast member, host, musical guest, or writer, and we add them to the ballot for your consideration. Once those nominees have been announced, we turn to you, the listener, to vote for the most deserving and help determine who will be enshrined for perpetuity in the hall. And that's how we play the game, my friends. That's simply how we play the game. But before we play the game, we always check in with our friend Matt. And we're going to do that once again this week and see what we can discern about Mr. John Lovitz from our friend Matt Ardill.
Matt!
JD, how you doing?
I am lovely as a flower.
Good, good. That's good because, you know, it's never good when your day sucks, you know, so it sucks. So I don't know. That's a really bad transition into my nominee that I want to talk about today. If you didn't watch the show, The Critic, it'd be okay if you missed that. So
What are you trying to say, Matt? That they didn't like your acting?
That's right. That's right. John Lovitz is like he's an interesting one. At the time, I didn't get it when I was a kid, and he was on because he was on. You know, during my high school years, which sure. for a lot of people is their peak years of SNL, I didn't get it. But now when I watch him, I'm like, oh my God, now I totally get it. You know, John Lovitz. Ready for some trivia.
Let's do it.
All right. 5'10", born July 21st, 1957, shares a birthday with Don Knotts. So, I mean, it's a good comedy birthday. He was born in the neighborhood of Tarzana in L.A. with a twin sister, Leslie. His father was a fan of opera and wanted to be an opera singer. This is what led his dad to encourage John to follow his dreams and pursue whatever career he wanted. Because he didn't want his son to put up with like just a job like he had. You know, and that's always good. He went to school with Lisa Kudrow's brother, David. And they actually backpacked across Europe and Israel together in 1978 upon graduation. He attained a bachelor degree in drama and joined the Groundlings alongside Phil Hartman and Paul Rubens. He has 130 acting credits, 4 writing credits, 4 producing credits, 12 soundtrack credits, including The Super Sleazy Singer and The Wedding Singer. He has performed a duet with Robbie Williams. His role as the eponymous critic in The Critic, Jay Sherman, appeared on The Simpsons in one of their early crossover soft launch backdoor pilots. So, you know, he's got a wonderful history. An early acting gig was at a Renaissance fair in Tuxedo, New York. Being of Romanian Jewish descent, he was fired on the first day because he kept referring to himself as the town Jew. thinking about John Lovitz, that is a really John Lovitz-y joke. During his early days in show business, when he first broke in, he actually lived with Penny Marshall, who allowed him to stay in her house while he was getting his feet. Worked as well. Yeah. I mean, like, that's one of those wonderful things. You know, people are like, oh, famous people. Oh, wait a sec. Sorry. Let me go back.
That's all right. That's the SNL HOF hotline. And it's probably Thomas calling to wonder what the hell we're doing up here.
Oh, I'll wrap it up here. He's worked as a waiter, clothing store, shop attendant, messenger boy, in a copy shop, a shoe shop, an orderly, during his rise to the show business. All things I think he's done on Saturday Night Live. Actually, I think they're all characters he's played. To pay Penny's kindness forward, he encouraged his friend's sister, Lisa Kudrow, and Maeve Quinlan, both famous actors in their own right, to pursue acting. He has appeared on Broadway at the Music Box Theater in Neil Simon's The Dinner Party, taking over for Henry Winkler in the lead as he sang, and he's also sung at Carnegie Hall 3 times, celebrating Gershwin. Lastly, he owns his own club, the John Lovitz Theater. So he is a true lover of the craft and an amazing nominee.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm, you know, Kate McKinnon didn't get in on the first ballot. Does he get in on the first ballot? I think he does.
Yeah. I think he's got enough legacy behind him. Like Kate McKinnon's still very recent, but you know, John, he's been around for a long time. He's established himself. I think he could be a first round.
Well, we better get downstairs before Thomas rings us again.
Yes.
All right. Thanks so much, Matt.
Thanks, JD.
Take it away, Thomas.
by JD and Matt. Appreciate that. Thank you so much. Welcome to another conversation portion here at the SNL Hall of Fame. We're going back to the era that I started, that like started my fandom. So I'm so excited about that today. I started watching in the early 90s, late 80s reruns, but this whole era, probably one of the golden ages, certainly of SNL, late 80s, early 90s, is definitely like the era that got me into the show. So this is super exciting to be talking about a cast member from that era. John Lovitz is the nominee today. And to join me to chat about John Lovitz, we have my friend, great podcaster, Brad Robinson. Brad, what's up, man?
Thank you so much for inviting me to talk about somebody who's been on the show within the last 30 years. That's great. I really appreciate the opportunity.
I don't want to try not to typecast you, pigeonhole you.
I appreciate it. It's like, how old am I?
You have watched television over the past,
since
1990, I think.
I have. But you bring up a great point, man. This is right around the time when I started watching the show, and we just had a conversation recently. This, to me, was the time to watch Saturday Night Live, because if you were a teenager, young teenager, like in the late 80s, early 90s, you were watching live, week to week, one of the best casts of all time. And the show was back, like you said, kind of a second golden era. It was so exciting. At the same time, cable had just kind of started. Not that anybody nowadays even remembers what cable is, but you could watch, they started putting reruns of the original era on. So you're like Comedy Central or A&E or whatever. So you're watching, possibly for the first time, those original era episodes of Belushi, Aykroyd, Chevy, and Bill Murray, and this era's cast. Like, simultaneously, it was all new to you. Like, you're watching the two greatest sets of casts at the same time. It was so great.
No, it was an amazing time. I remember watching truncated episodes on like VH1.
Yeah.
They would kind of like trim the fat a little bit. So we were warped. Our minds were warped thinking that like every episode had great sketches, but they just sort of removed the bad sketches.
Right. Yeah.
Kind of quietly. Such a cool era. And also there were less options. If you were a teenager around this time or a kid, there were just less options for things to watch. So you were kind of at the mercy of flipping channels and to see what. So if you're a comedy fan as a kid and you come across SNL, you're going to stay. Like, it's not like you can go on YouTube and watch sketches, TikTok and watch sketches. You're watching sketches on SNL reruns, or if you manage to stay up late, you're watching a live episode of SNL. Yeah. So this is how we got our comedy.
Saturday night at 11:30 was something. You tuned in, you wanted to see it. And if by some miracle you couldn't, you figured out how to like set your VCR so you could tape it and watch it the next day.
Yeah, exactly. What a time. I know. I'm not usually like just like the good old days. Like, I love the current stuff, but that was one of like the romantic things that I like to look back on. So John Lovitz just is right smack dab in the middle.
He's so good. I love Lovitz.
SNL fandom. I've been so looking forward to this episode. So Brad, a lot of exciting stuff going on with the podcast. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, I'm excited. I Thomas, you're going to get the big news break here, I think. We finished season 3 a few weeks ago. We finished really strong. We had a great episode with, we had Paul Schaefer on and Marilyn Suzanne Miller and Blue Lou Marini came on to talk to us. Last few weeks, we had some special episodes where we had some special guests on, some fun bonus episodes. So they've been really fun. We are diving back into season 4 in a couple weeks, but we've got some other big announcements coming out. So on the 19th, when we do our season 4 preview episode, we've got some big announcements, some changes and some things happening to the podcast. So you heard it here first. Check it out. And we're really excited. We've got some really fun new things planned coming up once we get into season 4.
Ooh, that sounds intriguing. I'm excited to find out what's going on over there. And hopefully I'll be like a British correspondent again for season 4.
We're actually getting rid of all of our British content. That's part of it. So, but don't worry, we'll find a spot for you somewhere, I'm sure.
Brad. I'll weasel my way into another episode. I mean, don't you worry. I will weasel my way into season 4.
I mean, I don't know what our show would be without you, Thomas. We love when you come on. It's the highlight of our episode. Every time we get a Thomas episode, we're like, yes!
Well, I'm looking forward to returning, looking forward to all the exciting stuff that's happening with your pod, looking forward to finding out what the hell is going on.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, it's going to be something. We got some big stuff. We hope it's big stuff. So, yeah, we're excited to get it out there and get back on with everybody. And I know this is the end of this season of the Hall of Fame, but congrats on the Robin Duke episode, man. That was really great. I don't know if you've gotten how much response you've gotten, but it was really great to see you get somebody from the show on and have such a really cool conversation. So I just want to throw that in there too. That was a blast to listen to.
Oh man, I appreciate that. It was like we were talking about how both of us, when growing up, we watched like those SNL reruns and everything, and being a comedy fan, I mean, I would watch SCTV along with
yeah.
that.
Oh yeah.
And just when Robin popped up on my screen before we started our conversation, I was like, oh my God, that's Robin Duke. Like right there. I should say something to her. Hey, Robin. It was just like very surreal, super sweet lady. Like Robin mm-hmm. was so nice. We were chatting a little bit before, and she hung on for a few minutes, and we talked about different things afterward. So that was just like such like as a huge comedy fan, devouring comedy over the last 30 years. Being able to talk to Robin Duke was just like amazing. Like young Thomas would have been so thrilled watching SCTV and say, hey, when you're in your early 40s, you're going to be interviewing her and having a conversation with her. So it was more of a conversation. It wasn't even an interview. It's like Robin and I were just chatting. Yeah. So thanks, man. I appreciate that 100%. So a little behind the curtain here, I reach out to certain guests like Brad and a guest that I tend to have on pretty frequently over the years. And I give like a list, like say, hey, here's who we're planning on for this season. Who would you like to talk about? Brad, you jumped at the chance to talk about John Lovitz. Like what made you so quick to call dibs on doing the Lovitz episode?
Well, I mean, I feel like for at least two seasons prior when you send the list, I've yelled and been like, where is Lovitz?
I think you have.
Like, where is John Lovitz on this list?
So you called dibs like a year and a half,
like
2 years
season
ago.
Season 3, I was like, when y'all get there, I'm doing Lovitz. I love John Lovitz. I think he is quintessential what SNL is. He's vital to that era, which is a very important era of the show, but just he is a great sketch performer, and he shines so well on this show, and particularly this era of this show. He's so good. He does a lot of things very well, and it's very rare you watch Lovitz and you feel like it's a miss. And I'm meaning on the show, on SNL, not other things, but when you watch him as a cast member on Saturday Night Live, two things. One, you see him a lot. He's very present in the seasons he's on. And his batting average is fairly high, very high, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. He's like a amazing, one of the great utility players in SNL history. And I don't mean that as like to minimize what he did on the show at all. Because you have like your glue, which is obviously like somebody like Phil Hartman is the classic glue guy. And then you have, I think, somebody like Mike Myers, for instance, who is just like a lot of the stuff, like he did some good stuff as part of the, just part of the sketch, but most he really shined as the star of sketches, mm-hmm. Mike Myers. But then you have John Lovitz, to me, where he can star in the sketch. We have so many examples of him starring in a sketch, but you could plug him in. You could plug him in to do anything too. And so he's just like a versatile, all-star type utility player. That's what I think of John Lovitz.
And I feel like it's like under the radar. Like there are so many to this day, John Lovitz lines I continue to quote, you know, like jealous acting. And on our podcast, Gary, I have a co-host, Gary Seath. Gary's ID on my phone when he calls is John Lovitz. And it's been on like that for, I don't know, 10 years. So it's just like the staying power Lovitz has as a guy who's been off the show for so long. It's just still so memorable. If you think about Saturday Night Live in this era, you cannot not think about John Lovitz.
Well, I'm curious though, because like you cannot not think about Lovitz from this era if you're like us, if you're like a big time SNL fan, right? Yeah. But when I hear kind of casual viewers or people, some of those like curmudgeons who like to say, oh, SNL was only good when, they'll say, I watched it during the Carvey, Mike Myers, Phil Hartman years. And they don't mention Lovitz. So like, I'm curious, like why the just more casual fan might not jump to Lovitz when they're even reminiscing about the golden years.
I the sin is Lovitz had to leave the show earlier than he should have.
That's
is
true.
Really the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if we start at the beginning or the end. Like, John had to leave the show because he was getting too popular. And at the end of his last season, before he came back, he wanted to do a movie. And he asked Lorne, can I come back late to do this movie? And Lorne was like, no, you have to pick one. Mm. It's kind of unheard of now. Like, now, well, now the cast is, you know, 55 people deep. So you can have people leave, do projects, come and go as they want. But the fact that Lorne made John Lovitz make a decision at kind of the height of his popularity and the height of the show's popularity at that point, he went away. And as he went away, by the way, he left, and I think he was replaced by 6 featured players. But we should also make point. When John Lovitz left as a cast member,
yeah, true.
It was replaced by like 6 other dudes as featured players. But when he left, that's when you started getting your Mike Myers, your Chris Farleys, your Adam Sandlers. And I think to your point, casual fans, when they think of this era as a very big era, like late 80s to late 90s, it gets overshadowed, or he gets overshadowed by those people who came in after him. But to go backwards, if Lovitz isn't around seasons 11 into 12, 13, 14, there may not be a show for like Chris Farley and Chris Rock and Mike Myers to come to. And I think that is the biggest thing for John Lovitz that gets overlooked, is how vital he was and important to this show actually surviving and getting to that later part of the era.
Yeah, I completely agree. Just as an aside, it's kind of wild in my mind, like how I just like have 4 memories. Like, Lovitz was in the same cast as Sandler and Farley. In reality, he wasn't. So that's so weird to me as an SNL. Like, I feel in my heart that Lovitz was on the cast with Adam Sandler and Chris Farley, even though that was not the case.
Right.
But I think I just kind of meld those eras, like those two, because even in that golden era, you're right, there's kind of like a demarcation. And I think Lovitz maybe was like almost the demarcation.
Kind of, yeah. It's like him and Nora Dunn leave the same year, and that's when the new guys come. But, you know, Phil Hartman stays on a little longer, Carvey stays on a little longer, Hook, so Miller. So you get the core, or the majority of that nucleus does hang on, but Lovitz just leaves a little bit earlier where he doesn't get that overlap.
No, I agree. I would have loved to see him stay a while. And nowadays, we see, like, even in recent years, like, Pete Davidson had a show and that was fine. A.D. Bryant did Shrill.
Yeah.
And that was fine. So it's just a different time. It was a different.
It's just different. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It was a different climate. But so he was part of Lorne's first season back in season 11, which was when Lorne brought in cast members who were already like fairly well known in the zeitgeist. Mm-hmm. He had your Anthony Michael Hall, Robert Downey Jr., Randy Quaid. John stood out for having like real sketch comedy chops. And like, I think you could see it right away. It was just all these people were actors and they were just trying to find their footing. But John, being a groundling, Brad, like, was really the standout. And he and Dennis and Nora ended up staying. But John, like, there's something about John that just stood out amongst that cast.
Well, of everybody you just mentioned, both those who didn't come back and those who were brought back for 12, he really is the sketch performer out of all of those people. Really, he probably is, like you said, the best sketch performer. Nora Dunn, also very excellent. Miller, of course, had the Weekend Update niche, so he was running with that ball. But yeah, I mean, you don't see that many clips when they highlight season 11. Very rare. And if you do, 9 times out of 10, John Lovitz is in that clip. He was like the shining beacon from that season. It's to the point where when the season ends and they do the big joke about the fire at the end of season 11 and Lorne's gonna burn the place down, he rescues Lovitz and send Lovitz out to rescue him for the next season. So it's like even the show knew who he was and what they had.
What are you doing? I gotta wave goodbye.
Don't ask any questions, John. Just go downstairs to my limousine and wait for me there. Writers.
Yeah, and I know John was like tried to be humble about it. I think I've heard him say he was talking to maybe like Terry Sweeney about that sketch, and Terry Sweeney was like, "Don't you see? They're like, it's like a kind of a dig on us. Like we're not, you know, like they're saying that we're not going to survive it." And John's like, "Oh, it's just a sketch." And then I guess he realized, like, well, I guess I'm the one that's being saved in the sketch, so it's easy for me to say. But even the show, they weren't afraid to like
jealous. Say, like,
yeah, right. We know John Lovitz is the standout here.
Yeah.
Again, Nora Dunn. I love Nora Dunn. Mm-hmm. Dennis Miller. So there's the three of them that got saved. But in that first season, we already saw these recurring characters happen. And like that second episode, I think Tommy Flanagan debuted in that second episode. And that was almost like the recurring character of that entire season. That
was the one. Yeah, that was the one. Totally.
Who am I kidding? I'm the owner of NBC. And I've been asked to clear up some of those beautiful rumors about Saturday Night Live. Now, as you know, the ratings have been astronomical. Through the roof. Why, better than the World Series, the Cosby Show. Yeah, that's it. We're neck and neck with the Cosby Show. And last week we pulled ahead. Yeah, that's it, ticket.
He did 3 on Update, 14 in sketches over the years. Do you think the Flanagan character, like, we got to kind of know John's sense of humor and sensibility through that?
It's a great character for him to do.
You're right.
And for it is such a Lovitz character. And a lot of his characters are like swarmy, kind of low-lifey, like kind of despicable-esque. Like he leans into that really well. So yeah, that Tommy Flanagan character is a great character for him to kick things off with for his career on the show. It encapsulates him very well, and it's so easy to buy John Lovitz as that character.
Yeah, I couldn't see anybody else doing it. And another word that I thought of was squirrely. Like, Lovitz plays squirrely characters just so well. The annoying man character.
Annoying man on Update, similar.
Which was so Lovitz. I don't see anybody else pulling that off, especially with Flanagan and something like that, especially anybody in the season 11 cast really being able to have that kind of commitment. That pathological liar, that's the ticket. See, like, Lovitz had all these catchphrases too, like, sort of permeated.
That they were always like they didn't feel like catchphrases. Like, it wasn't as blatant as like a Wayne's World or a Hans and Franz, but you would quote and repeat John Lovitz a lot. I kind of always thought like a cousin to Tommy Flanagan was the Girl Watchers character with him and Tom Hanks. Again, it's like some kind of shady, swarmy guy. It's just very Lovitz. It's so funny.
Looky here.
Ooh, me likes what me see.
Good evening. And good night.
Yow! Not even eye contact.
The ladies just don't like me.
To say the least.
My face is just too wide.
Yeah, and my hairline can't be helping either.
Yeah, and a very low life. And I don't think Lovitz, by all accounts, is like a really, unless you agitate him, because I know he can be confrontational when agitated. But I think for the most part, he was always like a pretty congenial person. He still has a lot of friends from the show. Like,
oh my God, yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll get into it later. But I also think Lovitz is a victim of being the butt of a joke for so long after the show. True. That if you weren't there and didn't see him on the show and you only know him as the butt of these jokes, you might not have the respect that you should have for him. Because when he was on the show, he was good and he helped carry that show. And I do think it hurts him a little bit with newer audiences who aren't familiar with him when that's how they remember or think of him.
Yeah, so when they do that joke, so I think, like, you know, when they do the, like, in the season 40 celebration, the SNL 40 that they did 10 years, 9 or 10 years ago, it was almost like they did the in memoriam show John Lovitz in the in memoriam. Like, do you almost like, as a big John Lovitz fan, or knowing like how good he was on the show, is it almost just like, oh man, I wish they wouldn't do that. And it's like,
I love
in some ways. You do love it? Okay.
No, because it's I will take Lovitz any chance I get. Like, I love it. And I thought it was hilarious. You know, you cut back to the 25th anniversary. He does this whole bit where he's questioning Tom Hanks about who his favorite cast members were. And like Tom Hanks is like saying Will Ferrell and other stuff. And they keep cutting back to Lovitz being like, what about me? What did you think of me? And that goes back to even Tom Hanks's the famous Five Timers episode. Which was the first season after Lovitz was gone, and he has a cameo playing the bartender or the waiter inside. He's like work is work. So it's like, as soon as he left the show, they started making fun of him. For 30 some odd years later, they just make fun of John Lovitz. But I love, anytime you see Lovitz, I feel like he always delivers.
Yeah, and it's one of those where if the show really didn't hold him in high regard, they wouldn't even make those jokes. Like, those jokes are reserved for a cast member who they actually really love. Like, they're not going to sit there and make fun of a cast member who maybe didn't do so well on the show, because then that'd just be mean. So to that point, so I guess it's like, okay, and then now, you know, younger viewers can go do their research, I guess, and look at old Lovitz stuff if they want to, and figure out, like, Mephistopheles, for instance. Oh, I'm like going back to stuff he premiered early in season 11. And that one was just like, I would love to see him and Jason Sudeikis kind of like do some sort of back,
like, dueling,
dueling devils or something like that. But John's take on it was just so great. He would go from he played the devil like just a normal guy.
He played him like John Lovitz, which is why you loved it.
Yeah, exactly. He played him like Lovitz. Do you remember that People's Court?
The People's Court is like,
that's the classic one, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The language in this document is fairly vague. Now, how exactly did you help Miss Braithwaite's business?
Well, Your Honor, in addition to giving her day-to-day advice on the running of a small business, tax planning and so on, I advanced her nearly $2,700 for new equipment. Now, I have here three canceled checks. One is for $1,260. One is for $940.
May I see those, please?
Yes.
Come on, let's go. Let's go. Yes.
Oh, this is a receipt from the Anita Barber Supply Company for three bonnet style hair dryers. As you can see, they've been paid in full.
Yes, thank you. I'll study this.
And so Lovitz played the devil. He was the defendant, I think, and the plaintiff was Rosanna Arquette playing a hairdresser. Her mom was played by Jan Hooks. And the way Lovitz played it, he wasn't like in the courtroom. He just played it like a regular guy. He like submitted receipts to the judge, like for like industrial hair dryers and stuff like that. But my favorite part was at the end where
With Kevin Nealon.
Kevin Nealon, he's looking directly into the camera and he's trying to like hypnotize or say, I have your soul, people watching me. And then the bailiff's like, here, you have to go. And he's like, oh no, hold on.
You watching this at home, worship me. I command you, become my willing thralls and live eternally.
That's all for this edition of the People's Court.
Oh, the sweet, sublime feeling of complete obedience to your evil master. Come, serve me, the Prince of Darkness. I command it. Serve me.
Let's go.
Wait one second.
Obey me. Obey me.
Remember.
And then he kind of comes like, so he kind of like breaks character, but breaks the devil character a little bit. Like, this was his classic, Brad. Like,
it's so good.
What other things should people know about from like the early?
Well, it's funny. I feel like, you know, again, he kind of flies under the radar. He gets under appreciated. You know, he wasn't a huge impressionist, but he did over like 40 impressions over the time he was there. Probably most famously Michael Dukakis.
Yeah.
Which we, you know, 1988, the election of 88, really when SNL kind of came back into commenting on politics. They did it a lot when Lorne was there the first time. And then during seasons 5 through 10, the non-Lorne years, they kind of stepped away from it a lot. So the 88 election, and I know you love that Debate 88 sketch. I know that's one of your favorites. You picked it on your other show as one of your essentials.
Yep.
Just the fact, you know, this is another one, like Gary quotes this one all the time. He's like, I can't believe I'm losing to this guy. like he just does this Dukakis stuff and really helps, obviously with Dana Carvey as well, but really helps Saturday Night Live get back into the political satire game again and doing it well.
Well, I guess the question, Governor, is do you think you have the necessary passion to lead this country?
Well, Sam, that kind of aspersion on my character, quite frankly, makes me, well, there's no other word for it. Enraged. Enraged. Maybe I shouldn't say that in the heat of the moment, but I can't control myself, and well, I apologize for flying off the handle. I'm just sorry my kids had to see me like this.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Lovitz made a relatively droll and drab person like Michael Dukakis. I mean, that was the hook for Michael Dukakis as Lovitz played it. But he really made like a really droll personality pop like that. So you mentioned like, yeah, the Campaign 88 sketch is one of my all time favorite sketches. And a lot of that is because of Lovitz and the way he can like modulate his tone so perfectly. And he was saying that he was upset, but he was like keeping the same tone, and he's like, I'm sorry for getting riled up, or like whatever he said. Like, he had to apologize for like raising his voice and getting upset, and he just played Dukakis so well. The writing, like Jim Downey and them, like there were such perfect writers for politics around that time. The Dukakis After Dark sketch, I urge people to go back and watch that, where Dukakis was like, it kind of like jumped out of character just a little bit. He was just playing like this smooth guy. He had a smoking jacket on. He was hosting this show with different guests, and just like Lovitz just found like a really nice hook for a politician who was rather dull. And I think that says a lot about Lovitz. And one another thing that I mean, we got to talk about. You alluded to it, and when you do a Lovitz impression. When I do a Lovitz impression, we're kind of doing the master thespian a lot of times, right?
Yeah.
Well, are we ready, Mr. Thespian?
Please call me master.
Oh, aren't we picky? Come, let's go. The children are waiting.
Well, couldn't they come in here? The acoustics are superb.
What's the matter, thespian? Having a sudden fit of stage fright?
Don't be silly. I'm capable of playing any role, even with half a finger.
Oh, how did that happen?
It didn't. Acting.
Ooh.
Acting.
Yeah.
That's another one. Still, every Christmas, I'll cover ho, ho, ho. When he plays a, he does, there's a great, my favorite match with Thespian is when he plays a mall Santa Claus. And he, you know, at one point he's like, line? And the guy's like, there is no lines. Ah, improvisation. Like, it's just, I love, that's my favorite one. I know the Lithgow ones are probably more well-known, but I love when he does the Santa Claus one. Yeah, Master Thespian is phenomenal. I feel like kind of an offshoot of that is, which I love, is Evelyn Quince, The Tales of Ribaldry.
Yes.
Which is, that of course is the picture I have when Gary calls me. But like, that's another one, which he only did a couple times, but it's still like such a memorable character. And that's a lot of his characters too. I don't think he did, some of them he did a decent amount, but some he only did like 2, 3, 4 times, mm-hmm. but they're still like so, so memorable. Hanukkah Harry is another one.
Oh, Hanukkah Harry. I think he only did that a couple times.
Twice, yeah.
Yeah, but that's like one of the things from that era that's like permanently in my brain.
Always.
Is Hanukkah Harry. That's like what a great concept. What a perfect person to play Hanukkah yes. Harry. If some of our listeners hadn't like went back and watched Hanukkah Harry, like describe the beats of especially the first sketch, the Hanukkah Harry Saves Christmas.
You can really only talk about the first one because the second one
Easter one.
They try to retread and do, okay, Hanukkah Harry Saves mm-hmm. Easter, which is still funny because again, it's Lovitz. But Santa Claus can't do Christmas. And so what do? And they call Hanukkah Harry to save Christmas. And he's got like, oh, I can't even do it. And he's like, all the reindeer that he has.
Moisha and Hershel Moisha. And Shlomo.
Thank you.
Yes.
And he goes and delivers presents. He's like, oh, I have something for you, little girl. And she's like, socks. He's like, can you believe it? And he's like so excited trying to, a dreidel. And it's just so funny because I get it. You hadn't seen a lot of like that kind of humor like mm-hmm. for a Christmas sketch. So to actually turn it around and do a sketch about Hanukkah and have a Jewish version of Santa Claus as Hanukkah Harry. And again, it's just the name is so Lovitz. Hanukkah Harry. Like it's just such a like name. Like a low, yeah. lowest common denominator name you could think of. Hanukkah Harry, why not?
Harry.
For Lovitz. It's so funny.
I'm not Santa Claus. I'm Hanukkah Harry.
Hanukkah Harry?
Yes, the Santa had a stomach virus, so I'm filling in, bringing toys to all the Gentile boys and girls.
Yeah, that theme song, too.
On Moisha, on Herschel, on Shlomo, says Hanukkah Harry, 8 nights a year. On Moisha, on Herschel, on Shlomo, means that Hanukkah Harry is here.
Of course, because around that time in SNL, you got to have a theme song.
Yeah,
but most of them hit though, and this Hanukkah Harry was classic too. And this was a cool one, and they made it universal. And I know it's like a niche, like it's kind of Jewish humor, obviously with the Hanukkah. But like me, I grew up as I was a Latino boy who grew up Catholic, but I understood this humor. Yeah. Like they made it so mm-hmm. accessible. To even somebody like me who didn't really, wasn't familiar with the culture. But they made this just so accessible for everybody. That was a really neat trick.
Yeah. They did a great job.
Yeah. Hanukkah Harry, one of my absolute favorites.
Well, I was surprised to see, I think it's his second most frequent. So the character he did the most was Tommy Flanagan. That's mm-hmm. the one we saw the most. I'm pretty sure number two is actually Tonto.
I think it is. Yeah.
Which is kind of hilarious because this is one I don't know if people know who this is anymore. I feel like this is a clip that's gotten pushed out of all the highlights and holiday shows. But, you know, they used to do a clip of Tonto, Frankenstein.
Played by Phil Hartman. Yeah.
Yeah. And, oh my God, why am I forgetting the third one?
It was...
Tarzan.
Tarzan, right. Okay.
Yeah, so Tarzan, Tonto, and Frankenstein. And so the first time they do it, they're all on a talk show as guests with Nora Dunn as the host. And it's really funny. I think this is actually one of the few instances of this sketch, if I remember correctly, Hartman breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so funny.
Like, even subtly. He, like, can't even control it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then after that, I think it's like 90% of the times it's like, season's greetings, like Merry Christmas, Happy Halloween, Happy Easter. It's like the three of them singing a song or something together straight to camera. But I was amazed when I saw like that was like his second most popular or most seen reoccurring character.
Yeah, if my stats are correct, he did Tommy Flanagan like 17 times. Tonto 14, and then Master Thespian he did 12 times. Yeah. So yeah, that Tonto one, it was a cool ensemble. I always loved Phil as Frankenstein. Fire bad. Like that's kind of where
it was just so bizarre.
It was.
Like I that's one we need to hear the story of who thinks up this sketch with these three characters, and then they just keep reoccurring, the three of them together, that just no rationale why they're together for anything, and just to constantly throw them back out at the audience. It's hilarious. It's such silly fun. There's a lot of stuff I say on SNL, mm-hmm. like this is really silly and stupid, but I mean it in a good way. And this is an example of that, where it's something silly and stupid, but it works so well.
Yeah. Silly and stupid is great. And John played that well. And like another silly and stupid thing, was when Danny DeVito hosted, and it was what I quoted earlier, the "you shot me." Like, so the sketch was Danny DeVito played, it was like this old, like Western kind of set piece. And, it was the whole, thing in Westerns where they say dance, dance. And then they shoot at the person's foot to have them move around. But he accidentally shot Lovitz's character's foot, and all Lovitz considering goes, you shot me. And then DeVito's character did feel bad about it. So he genuinely like didn't mean to. He was like, oh, I'm so sorry. But there's that whole like it was almost repeating a line so much where it starts off funny, then it's not funny at all, but then it's even more funny like the more he does it. So this is like an example to me. Bill Kenny and I had talked about it in the DeVito episode, but just hearing Lovitz's voice, like that's kind of like was the secret stew that like kind of made that sketch work, I think.
And that sketch is a good example too. You bring up, I feel like he's also very good at pulling emotions from you, good or bad. Like you could feel sorry that John Lovitz got shot. You can actually buy that feeling. To the same point when he does the Craig Talbert character with Hanks, the Girl Watchers character. Mm-hmm. You can feel sorry for that guy. No, didn't even look in my general direction. You just like feel his just everything just shrinking down. It's like he conveys emotion and gets that to an audience, I think, so well.
It's funny you say that because that happens in one of my favorite one-off sketches that he did. It was during an Alec Baldwin episode. It was called The Nude Talk Show. I don't know if you remember the Nude Talk Show, but so basically it was a guy who very earnestly has this idea for a talk show where he and his guests chat in the nude. And he's so excited. He pitches this. The network execs are like, yeah, sure. Let's try it out. So the ratings are really terrible. And then the kind of the joke of it is like, who would have thought that when he decided to have nude women on and they start talking about sex, that all of a sudden like it becomes popular and they win an award. But it was this guy who like very earnestly thought that this was a good idea, not because he wanted to like necessarily be a pervert or anything, but he just thought it was a good, like this has never been done before. Just some dudes, some people sitting around in the nude, just having a chat. And I could tell Lovitz in that sketch was like really wanting this to work. So I'm like rooting for Lovitz and his nude talk show.
Exactly. You could find yourself rooting for him in one sketch. And then even the very next sketch, you could be like disgusted or so put off by him because he'd be so revolting or be doing such obnoxious things. He could just change on a dime.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other main recurring character was like the stand-up comics. He was part of that. Started out with, I think, Hanks and Damon Wayans, and then it might have morphed like maybe whoever was hosting. I think it was a popular Hanks one too, but it was basically like these comedians who would stand around and talk to each other and make observations in a very Jerry Seinfeld way.
Right.
What's the deal with whatever? So that was another one that they did like in season 11 too. That's like, gosh, a lot of these recurring sketches, like some, I think a lot of people might forget, like that it started in that,
but they started there
season 11. And Lovitz, like he did play a big part in making sure that like there was a foundation of a show when they retooled into season 12, man, like what would have been like if they didn't have a performer like Lovitz that season.
Yeah. You also got to remember too, season 11, they had a cast of 14 people. They retool for season 12. They go down to 8.
Mm-hmm.
And that's including, I think, you know, Kevin, who's a Neil, and who's a featured player at that time. So the cast is so much smaller that you've got to be good. And so that only, I think, plays to Lovitz's strengths more because you just get to see him so much. Like anytime you would tune in to watch those episodes of SNL, you would see a lot of Lovitz. Part of it's because you had to, because you only had, what, four guys, and one of them's Miller, so he's not going to really be in sketches. So it's, you're either going to, you know, if you had a guy, you had Carvey, Hartman, or Lovitz. And you know what's funny, going back and watching, it took Phil Hartman a little bit of time to become that glue, that Phil Hartman character. Like, if you go back, we just recently watched the 15th anniversary for a special we're doing, and they showed the clips from those first 4 years, and it is very John Lovitz heavy, and there's not much at all of Phil Hartman from those first three seasons. It took him a couple years to become that glue we know and think of him as. Like, Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer didn't even come till after Lovitz left the show. So my point is being, like, Lovitz had the opportunity to be on there a lot and capitalized on it because he was so good at whatever role you needed him to do. And even in, like, small one-offs, one of my favorite sketches of that era is the Trekkies convention with William Shatner. First of all, Lovitz may not even utter a word in that sketch. I can't remember. But the one of the funniest moments of that sketch is Shatner, like, berating the crowd. And he's like, look at you. How old are you, 30? Have you even kissed a girl? And you see Lovitz, and he's wearing the Spock ears, and he just, like, shrinks and looks down. It's just genius. I think he has a line in the beginning when he's talking to Carvey or Neil or whatever, but it's just, yeah, it's like he can even just, you know, supporting character, one line or one reaction, and steal a sketch.
Yeah, yeah. Going to look back, especially, yeah, when they started in 86, it was really, like, Dana popped right away.
Yeah.
First episode on, Dana really did pop. And it was almost like Dana and John to start off were kind of like the two bedrocks. And Jan wasn't a lot because they needed, when they needed women roles, Jan got a lot of them. But, like, Dana and John kind of, like, until Phil found that footing.
Yeah. You know, Dana and John were supposed to be the first Bad Boys, right? You've heard that story?
No.
Yeah. The original version of the movie Bad Boys was supposed to be Dana Carvey and John
Lovitz.
Oh,
movie Bad Boys, really? Yes. I thought you meant like they were supposed to be positioned like the Bad Boys, like Sandler.
No, and the original,
like,
I think
the Will Smith, Martin Lawrence movie?
Yes, yes. The original incarnation was like more, oh, I don't know the story that well. I just, it was like, I believe it's like the original incarnation was more, well, more comedy, you know, more comedy, less actiony. And it was supposed to be the two of them. And I forget what happened, but because of all of that, I'm going to try to piece this together. John Lovitz's dog is named Jerry Bruckheimer. Like, there's a, I think he's on Fly on the Wall with Carvey all the time, comments, but I believe he named his dog Jerry Bruckheimer.
Oh, that's so funny.
But yeah, him, like, to your point, exactly though, him and Carvey, they were the guys who were really shining those first couple seasons as far as the guys. And then, yeah, you had Jan, who was stellar, and Nora Dunn. It's such a great cast.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome cast. John was such a huge part of it. His post SNL stuff, like,
I mean, I should say he was nominated for an Emmy twice. Like, I, you know, as an actor on SNL, was a two-time a two-time Emmy nominee for his work as a cast member on the show.
Yeah, so I guess at the time he was one of those where, I guess, like, at the time he was like really celebrated, and people knew how great he was. I just hope he doesn't get lost in, like, the history of SNL.
Yeah.
That's part of our
it's
job
tough
right
because
now.
Yeah, it's tough because he didn't come back that much. You know, he only hosted once after he left the show, and he only cameoed, I think, about 8 or 9 times, and half of those were the season after he left. You know, there was even a joke I remember, like, that next season, the season after, where I think, was it on Weekend Update or somebody's monologue? I think it was an cold open, but, like, they make a joke about Lovitz always hanging around even though he's been off the show. It's like, ever since he left, he's been the butt of the show's jokes. But I think that could hurt a little bit, the fact that he left and he went and did other stuff and, you know, didn't need to come back really. But when he did, it was always a treat.
Yeah, he hosted once again in November of 97, which I thought was like, I think returning cast members can be, it could be hit or miss, but I thought it was a fun night. I thought it was a decent episode. I thought John was a fun host. He had this Dunkin' Donuts sketch that I'll always remember. The time to make the donuts guy was like retiring and filming his last commercial. So that was fun. He played when Marv Albert was in the news for some salacious things. He played Marv Albert in the Letterman sketch, which I thought was really funny.
He brought back his Harvey Fierstein impression, one of the impressions he did a lot back in the day. They had a big Larry King, another sketch where they just parade out a bunch of impressions. But yeah, he brought out his Harvey Fierstein, which was great to see.
That was fun. Tommy Flanagan returned to Weekend Update.
Came back.
So I thought he did well for himself there. John, just like... I think he did find a really cool niche in Hollywood after SNL. Is like this great character actor. He was almost like to the type of person that was just so born to be that way. He led a handful of movies. Who we couldn't forget High School High, like classic. But he was a great character actor.
In all seriousness, A League of Their Own.
Oh yeah.
John Lovitz is amazing in A League of Their Own.
He steals the movie for a stretch.
You ever hear of Walter Harvey makes Harvey bars?
You know, the candy.
Yeah, you feed them to the cows when they're constipated.
That's the guy. He's starting a girls' baseball league.
So we can make a buck while the boys are overseas. Want to play?
Huh?
Nice retort. Tryouts are in Chicago. It's a real league, professional.
Professional baseball?
Mm-hmm. They'll pay you $75 a week.
We only make 30 at the dairy.
Well, then, this would be more, wouldn't it?
Oh, my God. I remember back then in like the mid-late 90s, I had friends of mine. We used to go to movies, and we created the John Lovitz Award. And we'd go see a movie, and we're like, who is the person who stole this movie? Because that's what Lovitz did in A League of Their Own. And for years, we were like, that's the John Lovitz role. Like, they're doing the John Lovitz part in this movie. Like, he was so, yeah, he could... be so good in other stuff.
Yeah, just little Lovitz-y things. Like, see how it works is the train leaves, not the station. Like, just little like moments like that. What? See all that grass, girls? Don't eat it. Just like Lovitz, just so
again,
he's good friends
swarmy.
With Penny Marshall, so you know Penny Marshall like knew what he was capable of. She knew what she was getting into when she put Lovitz for that.
Like the swarmy. Smart. There's a look where he sees Marla Hooch and he just gives a facial reaction that's quintessential Lovitz. So good.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's a great award. I'm gonna from now on, I'm gonna have to watch movies.
We gave it to Chris Farley in the Coneheads movie. I remember that was one of our winners.
Yeah. So he just found like such a cool niche. He did have The Critic, which I love
The Critic.
Love
very
The Critic.
Fun show.
Yeah, yeah. And he created another catchphrase there. It stinks. Like, his cadence just like demands like that people imitate him and remember what he says.
Well, and isn't kind of one of the defining, not characteristics or like checklist boxes of being a comedic icon is being on The Simpsons?
Yeah.
Because he did Artie Ziff on The Simpsons repeatedly. So it's like, he's guest starring repeatedly on The Simpsons, this guy.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, there was a crossover, I think, with The Critic and The Simpsons, but was it Marge's old like high school boyfriend?
Yeah, Artie Ziff was like her old boyfriend who became a millionaire and tried to win her back later on in life. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, you know it's Lovitz. Anytime you hear that voice, you know it's Lovitz.
Ah, so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just awesome. But yeah, I mean, I would want him to come back. He only, after he hosted that one time in 97, he appeared randomly in like a Dana Carvey monologue. In 2011, when Dana hosted, he popped up in a cold open when Adam Driver hosted in January of 2020.
Was that when he did?
He played
Dershowitz.
Alan Dershowitz.
In hell. Yeah.
He played Alan Dershowitz in a cold open when it was set in hell. So like really like since that 97 hosting gig, those are like the only times aside from the anniversary specials that Lovitz has appeared. So yeah, he doesn't have that recognition maybe amongst younger fans.
Yeah, too. We should also say, Phil Hartman, he is the guy who replaced Phil Hartman on News Radio.
Yep. Yeah. And that was like to help him out, like honor his friend. He and Phil were He said he would refer to Phil as like a brother, like an older brother.
Yeah, I mean, he's the one who got, he's responsible for getting Phil on the show. You know, he was getting Phil on after he did his first season. They brought the next cast, and he was instrumental in getting Phil Hartman on the show.
Yeah, yeah, but like as far as like true friendships at SNL, like Phil Hartman and John Lovitz is near the top with how close they were. Have we passed the point, Brad, where a John hosting gig is realistic? Are we just past that? Is that too much?
I think unfortunately we are. I would embrace it. I think it would be great. I think you'd get a slew of like cameos of old school people that you'd like. There was it was episode 2, I think, this most recent season, but there was a picture of him and Smigel backstage watching Carvey do Biden. It's like, you know, so he's still around, he's still part, but it's so great just to see him in the studio again and just know he's still there and welcomed was so awesome to see. But there's too much politics and I don't think you'd get him.
Yeah, we'll probably get him at the 50th, I would imagine, even if it's just like the in memoriam joke or whatever.
I guarantee you he's involved somehow. You could not do it without him. Yeah, he'll be involved somehow.
Yeah, 100%. So now's the time, Brad. We're talking to the water cooler voters. So just elevator pitch. Why should John be heavily considered for the SNL Hall of Fame?
I'm going to turn it around on you, Thomas. How could you argue him not to be in? I don't know what you could say to me that you could say John Lovitz doesn't deserve to be in. You know, we talked, he's got tons of characters we talked about, you know, tons of impressions that he would do. He's vital to the part of the show. I don't think we spoke about this enough. People who are responsible for Saturday Night Live existing and continuing to exist, he's going to be a little bit lower on the list. You're first going to, obviously, Lorne, then you have Dick Ebersol and Eddie Murphy, but you cannot underestimate John Lovitz being on the show in season 11 and one of only three carryovers into that next season and being the nucleus of one of, if not the, possibly, greatest casts in the history of the show. And because that cast is so good, I think that might be a reason that you don't think of him to get in the Hall of Fame. To which I'll argue a case, and you're a sports guy, Thomas. Does the name Dave DeBuscher mean anything to you?
Absolutely. New York Knicks, right. Detroit Piston, yeah.
Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. Number 5 of 5 of the starting five who got in the Hall of Fame. So just because he's on a cast with Phil Hartman and Dana Carvey and Jan Hooks and Mike Myers is not a reason to say John Lovitz should not be in the Hall of Fame. He is on par with all of those. This is like the 70s New York Knicks right here. That's how good this cast was. And Lovitz was instrumental in that cast. And like we're talking now 30-some years ago, and like without batting an eye, you're quoting characters, you're laughing out loud just thinking about stuff. And while he may not have had the best or most prolific post-career, and I know we mentioned it a little bit, I just wanted to say those post-show things for younger people who might not, you know realize what he did, but this is to get in the Hall of Fame as a cast member. And pound for pound, cast members of Saturday Night Live, you are hard-pressed to find better cast members than John Lovitz.
So there's that. I really want to thank Brad for stopping by and getting in a conversation with Thomas about Mr. John Lovitz. That was a really thorough look at his career, both inside and outside SNL. The news radio hit was a big one for me. I remember at the time really feeling like John stepped in at a time where that show was reeling and provided stability. And that was, you know, really great, considering he did the same thing on SNL. So consider that. Consider everything that Brad and Thomas discussed, and consider that as well. And of course, later this week, tune in to the SNL Hall of Fame Water Cooler, where you'll hear Joe and Shari give their 2 cents about Mr. John Lovitz. Let's now go to a sketch that Lovitz performed in. This is one of his most famous characters. Thomas and Brad were discussing, you know, famous characters, and they mentioned that Tonto might be number two. He has so many great ones, but Tommy Flanagan is near the top, if not the top, despite what Thomas and Brad said. So there's that. Let's go to that right now. This is Tommy Flanagan with Walter Payton from SNL on the SNL Hall of Fame podcast.
Yeah, let me have another beer.
You haven't paid for the first one yet.
Well, I did too.
You did not.
Are you calling me a liar?
Yeah.
Just asking.
Hey, Walter Payton.
Hi, Al.
Good to see you again, my friend.
Yeah, the usual.
Hey, Walter Payton. Good to see you again, my friend.
Do I know you?
Well, you should. Did you ever hear of the Heisman Trophy?
You won it?
Well, no. I posed for it. Yeah. Of course, I was a lot bigger then, because I was on stilts. Yeah, that's it. Too tall for Megan, they called me.
You mean steroids?
Well, I took those too, but only for the side effects.
You know, you don't look big enough to play football.
Oh, well, you see, I had a lot of injuries, and they changed my physique.
I don't see any scars.
Yeah, well, they were internal injuries. Yeah, that's what they were. In fact, I got one scar. Well, it starts right here in my mouth and goes down my throat, into my stomach, out my belly button, and ends up on my mother. Yeah. I was in pretty bad shape that day, but I played the next day anyway.
Well, I played a game with 6 broken ribs.
Yeah, lucky you. Why, when I was a kid, I played a whole season with a broken nose. We couldn't afford a football.
You know, I played 405 consecutive games without a miss.
Yeah, me too. In fact, during one game, I had my appendix taken out during halftime. Yeah, and I gave a pint of blood between every play. And why, by the end of the game, I was so weak that the crowd started a wave, and I was swept away in the undertow.
That's ridiculous.
And yet it happened. Of course, I'm retired now. Yeah, I'm making big money doing commercials.
Yeah? What kind? A hair club?
No, Zuzu ads. Of course, for the hair club. You know, not only a member of the hair club, I also happen to be the president.
I gotta be going, Al.
Oh, hey, well, really good seeing you, and your drink's on me.
Don't bother. I own this place. Matter of fact, I made a movie about it. Payton Place.
Oh, yeah, I directed it.
Yeah, I started it. Remember me?
No.
I was invisible. That's it. That's the ticket.
Oh. Oh, yeah, I think I saw you.
No, that was my brother. I said I was invisible.
That's impossible.
And yet it happened.
Really nice turnaround there at the end from Mr. Payton. Works really well. Hilarious sketch. Hilarious character. And versatile as well. You can do a lot with Tommy Flanagan. And, you know, in that case, he's sitting at a bar. He can be the SNL spokesperson at the beginning of the season. All sorts of good stuff. So there's that. I got to tell you that we've got a new email address. And I haven't heard any emails come through this email address yet. So it might be that it's complicated. It is the SNLHallOfFame@gmail.com. I don't know why I didn't just choose SNLHOF. I guess I might be what they call dumb. That's what we've got for you this week. I'd love to tell you what's coming up next week, but we're going to keep it a surprise for now. It's either going to be Bobby Moynihan or Adi Bryant being nominated. So either way, you've got a great conversation coming up with Thomas. You'll hear some wonderful trivia from Matt. And of course, we have special guests out the yin yang. That's all before we get to the Pardo episode. So there's that. That's what I've got for you this week. I hope you enjoyed yourself and made yourself at home here in the SNL Hall of Fame. But now, if you would do me a favor, and on the way out, as you pass the Weekend Update exhibit, turn out the lights, because the SNL Hall of Fame is now closed.
Thanks for listening to the SNL Hall of Fame podcast. Make sure to rate, review, share, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. follow us on social media at SNLHOF. This is Doug Denant saying, see you next week.
Duvra. Podcasts and such.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.